Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We have a special guest with us. Mater is with us. I said Mater from oldsoulradtrad.com. I ran across a lot of her tweets on Twitter and loved all the things that she had to say and thought I'd reach out and ask her to come on the air with us. So I want to thank you for coming on and being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I thought it was, I'm trying to think, the most interesting thing I saw in starting to follow your page was that you guys are homesteading homeschoolers. Is that right?
Well, our kids are not homeschooling age yet.
Oh, okay.
But we're very passionate about homeschooling. We were both homeschooled. But yeah, we homestead. We kind of like to say we're halfway homesteaders. We're in the process of starting it. So we are, you know, we have land, we have some animals, but we like to have more. So, yeah, we like people to follow us at the beginning of the journey too. So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. I've always thought, in some journeys in my life, like, converting to the faith or, I run an independent insurance agency. So I kind of look back at the end, not the end, but way down the path of those. And I think, man, it would have been awesome to kind of follow this one for myself. And then also I think, you know, in some circles, people would find those types of things interesting. But you got to start at the beginning sometimes. Otherwise it's just, you know, you just kind of jump into it midstream and it, all the hard work gets lost when you've
exactly.
already done it.
Exactly. And you know, my husband and I, we had wanted to write about homesteading, Catholicism, just the things that we love. But we were like, we'll do that once we're experts at it.
Yeah. You know?
and we were like, you know, we really benefit from watching people, you know, on YouTube or whatever, kind of start things. So we're like, you know, let's start it now. And if we make a mistake, you know, or do something that just didn't work, we'll tell people and maybe they'll learn from it too, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes those, the challenges, the obstacles, the failures, whatever phrase you want to put on it, that's what makes life real. And I think that's what allows
exactly.
people to really identify with you and with other folks, you know, online, social media, whatever is, it's not a polished product from the beginning. It,
right.
it takes a lot of years of work. And so when did you, how long have you guys been married and when did you kind of get started on this, homestead?
So we've been married, just a couple years now. So we're new in our journey together. And we lived when we first got married in a small little rental house, with no yard, no anything. And, our first house that we bought was on 5 acres and that's where we are now. So it's been a little over a year on the land that we have now. And it has been, you know, a huge learning curve going from having no lawn to mow, you know, to, okay, we got a tractor and 5 acres and chickens and all sorts of things. So yeah, we're new on the journey.
Yeah. What makes one person want to be a homesteader these days? What brought you to that idea?
You know, it's funny cause it's kind of seems like it's a fad right now, you know, it's coming
sure.
back. So we first started, you know, my husband grew up on about 10 acres. I grew up not on land, but I always had horses and rode horses. So I would spend, you know, all my weekends at the barn or the farm or whatever. And so we both kind of had, we knew we wanted our children to grow up on land. And it's just a fun way to grow up. But we started looking at things and we realized, you know, we could save money doing this, you know, growing our own food, living off land. You can't always save money doing it. I have to kind of warn people, you have to really do it slowly. You can lose money if not, but, we liked the health aspects of it, you know, growing our own food. We also just liked how it, just the lifestyle, kind of getting back to our traditional roots, something so good for a person about that manual labor outside, you know, making a meal from scratch, growing it in the garden, you know, coming in, cooking it. You know, it's just a really cool lifestyle. So we kind of thought, hey, this might be fun. And now we just love it. We just keep adding more projects, more things we want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think that that nature brings to the table in our faith life that maybe has been lost as we've gotten further and further away from the soil, so to speak?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. And it's something that we didn't really think the two were related at first, you know, nature and faith, but we've really seen the benefits just of having to work with your hands. You know, my husband and then myself, before I stayed home, we both had office jobs. And they're fine and they're great. We worked on a computer all day, but there's something about going outside, even if it's just for an hour, and building with your hands, or for me, working in the garden, you know, taking care of animals, having these little creatures dependent on you. There's something that you can really use to grow in virtue. You know, it really helps idleness. It helps with, even just being thankful for what you have. You kind of see the whole process. So there's a lot, if you use it right, you know, there's a lot there that you can use.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's a lot of things that I've made this point in the past. There's a lot of things that we used to see when we, you know, when we lived more agricultural lives. We used to mm-hmm. view things as miracles, you know, the exactly. rain coming at the right time and the weather that we needed. Mm-hmm. You know, we prayed for those things because it brought sustenance to our families. And now when we don't see those miracles that happen in order for us to go down to Aldi's or Walmart and buy food, you know, and so I think a lot of times we've things that used to be so awe-inspiring and in nature, we've just lost those as we've, you know, to your point, started sitting at desks all day and just going down to the grocery store, or going home and watching TV. My wife and I like to watch, what's the Alaska Homestead show, not the Bush People one, the other one. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
I don't know, but I haven't watched too much.
But so we like to watch that one, and it always leaves me thinking like, oh, we could totally do that. And my wife's response is always, you won't shovel the snow when it snows like an inch and a half outside. We're not moving to Alaska to become homesteaders. We would die the first winter we were there. What are some of the things that have been hardest to have to learn on the homestead?
Well, you know, you've got to do it slowly. And there's a tendency to my personality. As soon as we got out here, I was like, okay, these are all the animals we're going to go buy. This is, you know, just wanted to jump in first. And you really can easily bite off more than you can chew. But thankfully, my husband is he's a more objective one. He said, okay, let's just try one thing. So this past year, we butchered meat chickens, and oh man, that we learned a lot. We learned a lot because they come, they're so tiny and they're real hard to keep alive in the winter. We had, you know, we had to learn the hard way some things to do, and then just all being out there all day working, you know, to butcher these little guys. I mean, it was difficult, but
make sure you don't get too attached to them, right?
Right, exactly. But it also teaches you, you know, I think a lot of people hear that and they think it's very cruel, which we always tell people, we'll go look at, you know, a regular chicken factory, and that
yeah,
is
absolutely.
Cruel, you know, how they live. Our chickens were very happy.
Yeah.
But it really teaches you, you know, we take care of our chickens, and you take care of nature, you appreciate them for what God gave you, and then, yeah, you can't be super attached to them. They're not pets. Animals all have a purpose. And it really helps you kind of order, you know, in a culture that just elevates animals, idolizes them. It helps you have a right order, but also you got to, you know, treat them really, really well. So it's a good balance. That was a big project for us.
Yeah, I bet. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley. We're talking to Mater from oldsoulradtrad.com. Is Twitter your go-to social media? Are you guys on other platforms or?
Yeah, Twitter is where we're probably the most active. My handle is Old Soul Rad Trad. And then we have a Facebook page also, Old Soul Rad Trad. We have a Pinterest. It's the same name. But yeah, Twitter is, I think, where I'm the most active usually.
Now, you guys run a blog, right? That helps to kind of fund some of the homesteading. Is that accurate or?
So
or not
blog,
so much yet.
No, no, not so much yet. The blog is actually for special purposes. So, and we talk about it on our website. It's oldsoulradtrad.com. But the blog we started, we have a dream to adopt children in the future, and it is a pretty pricey thing. So we decided any money we make off of this blog, you know, if at all, will go to an adoption fund. So that's kind of a separate thing. We really want to make the homestead self-sufficient and not, you know, depend on other stuff for the homestead. But yeah, so that's what the blog is for, is for our adoption fund.
Gotcha. Well, you've had some tweets and some blog posts that I've really enjoyed. So I'm going to ask you about a couple of those. Again, yeah. I would encourage people to check out your website at oldsoulradtrad.com, and they can read some of the blog posts. Spiritual preparedness. Let's talk about that. I know you had a blog not too long ago, I think, about some different items that you can get and keep at your house and be prepared spiritually. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think it really helps to remember that, you know, our battle is not against flesh and blood, right? There really is spiritual warfare that goes on. And just like we stock up our house, you know, for, you know, if the electricity goes out or something, we prepare ourselves for physical calamities. But a lot of times, you know, the spiritual side of things is kind of forgotten, and we're really guilty of that. So we like to keep sacramentals around the house, and I kind of made what I call the spiritual preparedness kit, which of course is useful in a physical calamity of some sort where you're stuck in the house or something, but also when you're facing temptations or just any kind of even demonic influence, really. But these are the tools the church has given us. So we've got exercise salt, blessed holy water, extra scapulars in case, you know, ours breaks. Just things like that, you know, the palm branches from Palm Sunday, things like that that really the church has given us, as one priest called it, they're fly swatters, right? Because the demons really kind of are like flies. You just got to swat them away. They're there, but you got to swat them away. So those are our spiritual fly swatters, we call them.
Gotcha. So somehow all of our palm branches end up on top of the washing machine down in the basement. I have no idea how they get down there. Yeah. I don't know if they're coming down in laundry baskets or what, but there's a stack of them that have congregated downstairs on the basement or in the basement. Tell us a little bit about the exercise salt. Cause I think everybody's familiar with, you know, holy water and I would assume scapulars. Where does the salt come from, and what's that process, and what are some of the benefits?
Yeah. So the salt is really cool cause it's not just blessed. It's actually exercised. The priest, you don't need an exorcist to do it, but the priest can do a small exorcism on the salt and, just, you know, regular grocery store salt, bring it to your priest. He should have the right to be able to do it, the RITE, right? And then he will exercise it, and you can keep it in your house. You can, now in traditionally blessed holy water, there is going to be a little bit of exercise salt in that holy water, but if your priest does not use a traditional blessing, you can put it in your holy water, mix it in there, so when the holy water evaporates, you still have some stuff, you know, in your holy water fonts. But we use, you know, I put a little bit of the exercise salt in our food, just a couple of kernels, I guess is the right word, grains of salt. In our food, you can put it just a little bit on your doorways. I heard one priest recommend, you know, when you go out of town to a hotel, just sprinkle a little bit on the floor because you just don't know what was going on in that room. You know, you don't know when you'll need that kind of protection. So yeah, it's meant to eat. It's meant to be sprinkled on the floor and just protect you, you know.
So the next time that my mother-in-law is coming over for dinner, I need to get some exercise salt and put it in the food. There we go. I know one of the other blogs that has been recently, and I think I don't know if this is your new go-to. I know you've had a lot of tweets about it, is Sundays as a day of rest. And I know you've talked a little bit about the benefits, but then also how to prepare for being restful on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's been, I guess, a tangent our family's been on.
I didn't want to use the word tangent, but I'm glad you did. It's yes. been a lot.
No, it is. So we kind of came across, I don't remember what it was first, just a, a little excerpt about Sundays. Oh, it was Maria von Trapp's book, Around the Year with the Von Trapps. And she talks about in there Sundays, how they used to view Sundays. And we just realized our Sundays fell very short of what they could be. You know, we knew not to rest. We knew to try to eat at home. We knew to go to Mass. But beyond that, we just, you know, to be honest, we weren't good at making it a holy day. So we've kind of been reading a lot, trying to really, okay, let's sanctify this Sunday. And it's hard. It used to be a cultural norm. You know, you learned how to sanctify Sunday because you watched everyone else do it. But we're not in that situation now, you know.
Yeah, and there wasn't even really, I mean, the temptations were gone. Businesses right. were closed on Sunday, and the kids exactly. didn't play sports or anything on Sunday.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So a lot of the work just being, going back to our traditional Catholic roots, we have to do a lot of the elbow work ourselves to restore this culture, you know. So anyways, we've been looking into a lot, and we've realized it takes a lot of work to rest on Sundays, you know.
Yeah.
Our Saturdays are
busy.
So busy, yeah, because if you're going to make the commitment to not go run to the store, you know, not go out to eat, do stuff like that, well, you've got to have the food there. If you're going to decide, okay, I'm really going to try not to do a load of laundry today, well, you've got to plan it in advance. And I've just realized, okay, I'm going to share what I've learned with people so that maybe they don't have to make some of the mistakes that I've made, you know, trying to learn it. But yeah, it's been a cool, you know, it's been a very hard but very rewarding process to just keep that day separate.
Now, how do you think Saturday vigil masses fall into that, into our ability to acknowledge Sunday as a complete holy day? Where do you stand on that?
You know, we don't, our parish is it's a traditional diocesan parish, and so they don't have any kind of vigil mass. So it's never really been, I guess, we've never had the opportunity to go, but when I was younger, I guess, and my husband, he would go to a couple vigil masses on Saturday, but it really gets the whole thing confusing, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Okay, Sunday is a day for prayer, but I didn't go to Mass today, you know? And of course, going to Mass is better than not going to Mass.
Sure.
But if we can, you know, I was reading from Father Sparaga's Catechism Explained last night, and he's just talking about Sunday is for prayer. And, you know, we like to think, well, Sunday is just to rest and chill, but it's for prayer, and the best way to pray is the Holy Mass, you know? So, I think that's made it confusing for
and
sure.
For those that are listening, we're not saying that Saturday is illicit, so stop, don't email
right,
us.
Right.
This is not.
No, please.
We would prefer you go to Mass either Saturday night or Sunday. It's not illicit, but I do think you're right. I think that there's a benefit. We tend to go Sundays at 9 o'clock. We do go mm-hmm. on Saturday from time to time. And you know, it is interesting. It sets a different tone for the day. I think it allows us more, you know, it puts us in a position where we're not rushed getting up and getting kids ready and everything else.
Yes.
And so there is less stress in the morning, but I think it also, by the mm-hmm. time the afternoon rolls around, it has a different feel to it. So I guess the motto is go on Saturday, go again on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then we solve both problems.
Right, right. That the Sunday mornings, that's a real thing. You know, it's hard to pray at Mass when you've just been rushing around like crazy on Sunday mornings. So that's another area we've really had to, okay, lay the baby's outfit the night before, lay my outfit out the night before, go to bed early. I think I said this on one of my tweets, my husband and I used to have a glass of bourbon, you know, on Saturday nights. We stopped that. We're like, gotta be, you know,
yeah,
you get refreshed. And
yeah,
ready,
you wake
and
up a little foggy eyed.
Right, right. Or you just don't sleep as well, or what have you. And so that's why I say, you know, sanctifying Sunday, you got to plan and prepare, you know, so you're not rushed and like crazy people getting out the door.
Absolutely. You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio. Mater is with us from OldSoulRadTrad.com, or you can follow her or her husband on Twitter. What'd you say, Pinterest, Facebook, any of the above? When we come back, I'm going to ask you some questions on Catholic Twitter and what it means to be Catholic and on social media these days. We're going to take a quick break. Again, this is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hey, welcome to this Battle Ready Minute. You know, every current generation always rests upon the shoulders of the generations that have gone before it. We see this in most every area of life. It's also very true in the area of our faith. The Catholic faith that we have in our world today, what we understand it to be, very much rests upon the shoulders of those who've lived it out before us, generations ago to now. Think about this, how faithful or unfaithful they were to Christ and to his church affects what we have today. Same goes for us, though. We Catholics alive today are preparing generations to come by how faithful or unfaithful we are to Christ and to his church. When we are committed to our faith, consider the consequences and how amazing and wonderful those consequences are. But the flip side is also true. If we don't take it seriously, if we're half-hearted in the way we live the faith and we don't pass it on, we don't train our children in the spiritual weapons of the faith, just consider the devastation that can come from that. We see it, we know it, it's all around us. And that devastation can last for generations. We need to realize that it's upon our shoulders right now, and we need to respond. No excuses.
We are back, Catholic Conversations, with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you're just tuning in, you missed a fantastic first segment with Mater from OldSoulRadTrad.com. Go back and listen to it on podcast, either Podbean or iTunes. Or if you're listening to us on Saturday at 3 o'clock, tune in again tomorrow for Sunday at 3 o'clock and catch the whole episode. Mater, again, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You and your husband, Mater and Pater, are the going to be homeschooling eventually, right? But homesteading
right.
Currently. And you run a blog at your website, OldSoulRadTrad.com. I would encourage people to check it out. It's got some great information. We were covering in the first segment the spiritual preparedness kit that you guys have put together, your tangent on being restful on Sundays and what that really means for your whole weekend. It really starts, I think, on Friday, right? I mean, in order to be restful on Sunday, there's so much, I think, that gets put off for the weekend, whether it's cleaning the house or getting laundry done or going to the grocery store, that if you're going to be ready to rest on Sunday, you really got to start to tackle a lot of those things on Friday. So,
absolutely.
So that'll be my plug for a 4-day work week. Just work Monday through Thursday so that you still have your 2-day weekend, and then boom, Sunday is 100% rest. Prayer,
right,
rest, family time.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. OldSoulRadTrad.com. I wanted to ask you, so I found you on Twitter. That I had come across some of your tweets. I liked them. I thought it'd be cool to have you on the show. How long have you been on Twitter?
Not long with this account. It's been about since January. I think years and you had a personal Twitter when it first came out. But yeah, it's changed a lot.
Yeah, so
it's changed a lot.
I think I started a Twitter account, I don't know, probably 5 or 6, 7 years ago. So I guess I could go back and look, but it took me up until a year ago before I was even willing to respond or comment on. I mean, it is such a strange platform.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is.
Unfortunately, it's extremely mean most of the time, it seems like.
Yep.
The first couple times I finally got up the nerve to comment, I immediately regretted it. And I was like, okay. And then you just kind of have to, I think if you're going to be on Twitter, you just have to kind of grow this thick skin where you're like, you know what, I'm going to say what I want to say. I probably shouldn't read the comments afterwards. I'm just going to move on.
Right.
What's it like being Catholic on Twitter these days, or social media in general, but maybe Twitter specifically?
Yeah. So there's the divisions that are in the Catholic Church, the Catholic laity, are very clear on Twitter. I don't think I realized that there were such stark dividing lines till I got on Twitter. You know, we named part of the blog Rad Trad because in our circles, it's kind of a joke. It's, yeah, we're a little crazy. We love, you know, the, you know, tradition. And then I got on Twitter and I was like, oh, people use this as an insult. You know, it's kind of funny. So there's just a lot of division. And the thing that I think is hilarious is all the blocking. You know, as soon as someone says something they don't want to hear, they block them. And Catholics blocking Catholics. I mean, I just think it's so funny. It's like, if you think a Catholic has a different point of view, and you think they should have, your point of view, maybe don't block them. Let them see your, so you could change their minds or something. But yeah, it's wild. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of temptation on Catholic Twitter. You've got to be constantly on your guard, because regular in air quotes, regular Twitter has a lot of impure stuff on there that people just share. And there's a tendency in Catholic Twitter to, share it and dunk on it, so, reply to it or quote tweet it. And then you've got that impurity on everyone else's feed, and so you really have to be vigilant about not doing that, about what you share. And there's also the temptation to sin with, calumny and gossip, all of that. It's just almost magnified on Twitter. So it can be a great place. I think I've learned a lot from what people have shared on Twitter, certainly, because there's not a lot of traditional Catholics in my area. So it's nice to have access to so many and to what they do and hear their ideas and their suggestions. But yeah, it can be a rough place out there.
Yeah, to be clear, Twitter is mean in and of itself, but Catholic Twitter is not any better. Unfortunately, right. As Catholics, to your point, there's very clear, defined lines in regards to which side of the heretical fence you may or may not feel like you're on, which side of the schismatic fence you feel like you may or not be on. And it's not any better than, I guess, quote unquote, secular Twitter. Yeah. So be prepared when you get on. But to your point, you can learn fantastic things. There are fantastic people. I like it because I think, it continually challenges me as a Catholic who tries to live more and more of a traditional Catholic, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. There's things that, so I'm a convert since 2009 and I've said that there's things today that I understand that are sins that I didn't have any clue were sinful, 10 years ago.
Absolutely. And, I'm the same way. Absolutely.
And I think that that's why I unfortunately a lot of times get the judgment card laid upon me because I'm willing to tell folks when I may disagree with things that they do. But if somebody's not willing to tell us the things that we do that are sinful, or people aren't willing to point them out on Catholic Twitter or whatever it might be, it's really difficult to learn. I mean, you can't read every single book that's out there, and maybe you pick the wrong book and you spend 2 months reading a book that doesn't pertain to you. And so, so there is a lot of benefit to it. I'm with you, however, on the blocking. I don't understand, and this has been a tangent that I've been ready to go off on for the last 2 or 3 weeks on Twitter, so I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, are you in kindergarten? Like, why are you instantly blocking? I don't understand blocking people at all. And maybe if I had, a million followers and I had to block people to keep them from DMing me or whatever stuff that was just pure hatred and evil, that would be one thing. But to block somebody because they tweeted something that I didn't like their one comment. I finally got blocked for the first time, I don't know, a month ago. I stood up for Tim Gordon in his skateboards with the Blessed Mary's picture on him. And this lady who I'd been following back and forth for months and had defended her on multiple occasions instantly blocks me. And I'm like, I just don't even understand. Like, what are you blocking people for? Like, it just, back to if you're utilizing the space to try to become a better person and hopefully a better Catholic and to learn, and then, what, you're not doing yourself any good by blocking people. The other thing I don't get, I'm going to ask you for your take on this, is the 90% agreement that we have with folks. And yet we, a lot of times it's the 10%, or sometimes not even 10%. Sometimes it's like one specific thing and it gets completely blown out of proportion. It's like, well, I can no longer talk to this person because, he or she said this one thing that I disagree with. We might believe everything else that's the same. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, does Twitter just amplify that kind of stuff?
It does. And I think that the Tim Gordon thing was a perfect example. It's like, okay, you can disagree with the skateboard thing. I don't think he's going to lose sleep over it, but you don't have to, not listen to anything he ever says anymore because you disagree about the skateboard. I mean, that's kind of where I stand on that. But Twitter totally amplifies it. And it, I see as traditionalists, or people even just serious about their faith and trying to discover tradition, we can have the tendency to let the perfect be the enemy of the good, you know, that saying. And so we, and it's right, it's a good thing. We try, okay, I'm only going to read stuff that I know is sound theologically. I'm only going to, you know, have a confessor or a spiritual director that I trust. But we kind of take that to Twitter, and it doesn't really belong there. You know, it's like we need to learn how to, okay, well, I disagree with this person, but I don't need to make a big stink. He's learning too. I'm learning too. Maybe I'm in the wrong. You know, it's like we take something that's probably a good inclination to be really careful about any tiny little wrong thing. It just doesn't seem to, usually it doesn't seem to have a place at Twitter, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Again, we're talking to Mater from OldSoulRadTrad.com about social media, Twitter in particular, and Catholic Twitter especially. The newest firestorm on Catholic Twitter, it seems like, has been the non-working, the stay-at-home mom debate, and whether or not mothers should be staying at home. The firestorm around something that seems like it should be a fairly benign, you know, do you think that mothers in general are better suited to raising their children if they don't have to work? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like for most people that would be a fairly benign conversation, and yet the right. ensuing vitriol that I've seen on Catholic Twitter especially is just, it blows my mind.
It's insane. And you're right. We should be able to say, you know, this is objectively usually the best thing for kids. It's the best thing for your family. And what happens when you say stuff like that is people bring up the crazy nuanced situations where maybe it's not, you know?
Yeah, well, I know a guy that's completely paralyzed. And he's got 5 kids and he can't work, so his wife has to go work. So you're saying she's going straight to hell.
Right.
No, that's not
right,
what I
right.
said.
Exactly. It's like this movement, I think it was Tim Gordon who said this first, and it's so true, that people want you to lead with a nuance, you know, lead with all the exceptions and everything's okay, instead of, okay, let's say the standard, let's state that first, what we should all strive for, but you don't have to take it personally if you're in a different situation, you know, and I think that's what it is. I think people maybe even feel convicted. They don't like being told that they've got to make some big changes, and they lash out, and it's ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. To clarify for some folks that maybe are listening that haven't yet followed along, your website is oldsoulradtrad.com. How did that come up, and what does Old Soul and Radtrad really mean to you?
Well, we're really old people at heart, is what we say. You know, we like the way that things used to be, and we're a little bit what's the word? We daydream about that, you know. But so that's where the Old Soul thing. We wanted a way to tie in the homesteading, because it really is, homesteading is an old way to live. We're trying to pick up lost traditions, you know, whether it's canning, you know, little things like that, or it's bigger, like it's resting on Sunday and honoring the Lord's Day. So, yeah. And like I said about the Rad Trad name, I mean, I just had no idea all of the connotations it had on Twitter, really, until I got on Twitter, because in our community, it's a joke, you know, it's funny. It's like, yeah, we're the kooky traditionalists, you know, and we kind of own it. But on Twitter, there are some really crazy people
yeah.
on both sides, and they kind of smudge the name a little bit, but yeah, that's what it means to us.
Now, how many blog posts are you up to? Do you know? Do you number them,
or
are they just
know.
They're just out there?
I don't number them. They're just out there.
What do you think? What do you think has been your favorite one? Maybe what was the easiest one to write?
You know, the easier ones, or when I just write about how I do stuff. You know, I had a post about how I clean the house, my schedule, and that's easy because that's what I do. I'm just kind of telling you what I do. And it was funny. It got a lot of reaction, and I didn't realize that people, that kind of stuff helps people. You know, you're kind of doing the thinking for them, the hard planning work for them, and people like to see how you do stuff. And those are the easy ones for me to write. You know, the harder ones are, the post about my conversion to Catholicism. I mean, that was a really hard one, even though I'm much more passionate about that than housekeeping, you know, but it's hard to kind of do that inner reflection and say, okay, yeah, I was really wrong here. And it's hard to pinpoint your testimony. I'm sure you know that feeling as a convert. It's hard to say, okay, when did things change? You know, because they change subtly and then they change in big ways, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's nothing better than a good conversion story.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems to me that, like, that wasn't a phrase or an idea that I, as a Protestant growing up, that I had ever heard. Like, that wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you hear a conversion story from a Protestant, it might be, well, I went to this revival and I found Christ and that was it. Like, that was the whole story. But for Catholics, a lot of time, I mean, I know my conversion story. I've actually, that's how I got started on this radio station, because I was asked by a different host to come in and talk about converting, and it took the whole hour, and I got it into an hour just because I shortened it way down. But it, you know, it's like years and years long of a process sometimes, especially, and again, back to that kind of looking back on the steps that we took that at the time didn't seem like they were in the footsteps of Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, they were just day-to-day decisions. And then you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, like that what seemed so benign at the time, you know, was in this greater picture of my conversion. So,
right. And I think that the whole idea of a testimony is totally different with Catholic spirituality, because when you're a Protestant, you say a prayer and you're saved, you're in. And so there's a pretty black and white testimony. I was not saved, and then this event happened and I was. But, you know, Catholicism, you're always growing. And that's what I like to frame my conversion story as, because, you know, I became Catholic. That's how I confirmed First Holy Communion in the church. But my road to converting my heart, you know, it's ongoing and growing in virtue. And that was almost just the beginning of the story, you know, and I'm sure you can relate to that as a convert. But yeah, it's totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of your tweets, I think a week or so ago, back to the easy part of this conversation, was was the how to put away dishes, right? Wasn't that your tweet?
Right.
And I said, well, that might be the best way, but the easiest way, but the best way is to sit on the porch with a beer and your wife and tell the kids that they can have ice cream once it's done. So.
Oh, I can't wait till I have kids that are old enough to do the dishes for me. I mean, that's the little things right there.
Absolutely. You know what? It's our fourth child, who's four. I probably got that right. For all I know, he's probably five. I don't know. I think he is four. He'll be five in December. None of the other kids ever gravitated to this, but he loves refilling my coffee cup in the morning. So my wife and I usually get up early and we'll, you know, hang out on the couch and talk and check social media or whatever and have a couple cups of coffee. And when he comes down, he's like, are you ready for more coffee? It's just the little things in life that are so great. And having him be willing to... And he does such a great job. The first few times were a disaster, but he's gotten really good at it. So it is fantastic. But you're listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We have Mater with us from her blog and her website, oldsoulradtrad.com. We're going to have to take another quick break. Do you have time to stick around and do a gospel reflection with us for this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, you're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We're going to be back with Mater. We're going to wrap up and do the gospel for this week. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Radio, changing hearts and minds.
I started listening to the Catholic radio a few months ago. I guess I'm a little hypocritical right now because I'm not Catholic, and it just makes my day go by so much faster. I love the spiritual family that you have. I just think it's so awesome.
We depend on your support to keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air 24 hours a day, broadcasting the truth and beauty of the Catholic Church.
We are back, Catholic Conversations, with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you're just tuning in for our gospel reflection, we are glad to have you, but we're going to encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast on Apple iTunes or on Podbean, or download the app at the App Store or the Google Play Store, because you missed a great show. We've had Mater on from oldsoulradtrad.com. She is on Catholic Twitter, which is the same as Twitter. But if you get in there and you're Catholic, you're going to understand pretty quickly that there's Catholic Twitter also. And so we want to thank her again for coming on with us. Hopefully we can get you rescheduled at some point so you can come back and tell us about your conversion.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I did a short post about it on my blog on oldsoulradtrad.com, but there's so much more to the story, and sometimes it's easier just talking, you know,
absolutely,
talking about it.
So absolutely. How long have you been Catholic? When did you convert?
2013. So I'm on year 5, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I was class of 2009.
Okay.
So not too much longer before you. Yeah. Were you raised I don't want to get too far into it cuz we have to do the gospel, but were you raised Christian or were you?
I was.
You were? Okay.
I was raised in the Presbyterian denomination, PCA specifically.
Gotcha.
So a big difference from staunch Calvinism.
Yeah.
Catholicism.
Absolutely. I had a good conversation at Buffalo Wild Wings yesterday with a guy who claimed not to be Calvinist, but only because he disagreed with like one out of the 5 points of Calvinism. So I'm not sure.
You're Calvinist.
Yeah, that's what I kept telling him. I'm like, hey man, I don't know what you're going for here, but so let's jump into the gospel again. I so thank you for being with us, and I encourage people to go back. We've had a great conversation. Go back and listen to it. This week's gospel is again from Luke. We're still in chapter 16. This is verses 19 through 31. Jesus said to the Pharisees, "There was a rich man who dressed in purple garments and fine linen and dined sumptuously every day. And lying at his door was a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who would gladly have eaten his fill of the scraps that fell from the rich man's table. Dogs even used to come and lick his sores. When the poor man died, he was carried away by angels to the bosom of Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried, and from the netherworld, where he was in torment, he raised his eyes and saw Abraham far off and Lazarus at his side. And he cried out, 'Father Abraham, have pity on me. Send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am suffering torment in these flames.' Abraham replied, 'My child, remember that you received what was good during your lifetime, while Lazarus likewise received what was bad. But now he is comforted here, whereas you are tormented. Moreover, between us and you, a great chasm is established to prevent anyone from crossing who might wish to go from our side to yours or from your side to ours.' He said then, 'I beg you, Father, send him to my father's house, for I have 5 brothers, so that he may warn them, lest they too come to this place of torment.' But Abraham replied, 'They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them.' He said, 'Oh no, Father Abraham, but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent.' Then Abraham said, 'If they will not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded if someone should rise from the dead.'" The gospel according to Luke. All right, Mater, what's your take on that?
What a great gospel. You know, there's so much in there. And it's funny, I recently heard a comparison of the rich man in this gospel to the thief on the cross, which is really interesting. You know, there's so much that we could talk about here, but this is just a tiny little portion. So the rich man, the thief on the cross, both big sinners, right? But what does the thief on the cross ask, right? He asks if he could be with Jesus in paradise. He doesn't ask to be relieved of his suffering, to be delivered of the cross. But the rich man, what he asks for is for relief from his suffering. He still does not ask if he could be with Jesus for that beatific vision, right? He doesn't ask for that. And it's really, you know, kind of convicting. How often are we like, can you just take this cross from me? Can you relieve me from suffering? But that's not the right path to be on. Whatever you want to send me, just as long as I can be in heaven with you, you know? So I recently actually heard that comparison, and I just thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. I posted on Twitter this morning, or retweeted a blog from the Storm Time of Mercy, and it was about the greatest sin of our time, which is our inability or our unwillingness to just accept suffering. And how true it is that, and again, really kind of going back to the beginning of our conversation about homesteading in general and how nature impacts our faith and all those types of things, we've so insulated ourselves from suffering that we no longer understand the beauty of suffering. We no longer actively maybe even seek out to suffer for others or to suffer for ourselves so that we might be purified in our faith and tie that suffering to the cross. But instead, we've so insulated ourselves from suffering because we don't have to grow our own food or make our own clothes or do those types of things that were difficult in the past. And so, you know, again, back to that idea that when we insulate ourselves from suffering, we also insulate ourselves from seeing the miracles that God puts in our life in order to bring us out of those sufferings. And so it's a very interesting analogy that you had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's almost a better way to say it than I said it earlier about homesteading. But really, I mean, whenever you choose the hard way, you know, the harder way, there's always benefits. Homesteading is a tiny little picture of that. You know, you have food that tastes good and it tastes better. Usually it's healthier. And that's kind of a microcosm for what really the way of penance and the is and how God just blesses that.
Yeah.
And gives you so much grace.
Yeah. And I also think to your point that, in choosing the easier path, so to speak, let's say it's, you know, spending the time tending the flock, whether you have chickens or sheep or whatever, and growing your food. If you take the quote unquote easier path and go to the grocery store and buy the stuff, if you spend that extra time that you freed up in doing things that continue to glorify God, well, then that's not maybe to your detriment, but unfortunately, we don't tend to do that. We tend to take quote the easier path. We free up time on our weekends or during the week, and then we still don't give that time back to God. You know, we spend it, you know, watching TV or doing any number of things that, you know, to your point, the devil's play place is idle hands. And so when we have work that just has to be done to continue our livelihood, we've at least eliminated hopefully some of that idle time from that. So,
right. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like this, you know, you're kind of forcing yourself to be dependent on manual labor because, you know, the animals got to eat every day, you know.
Absolutely.
Come hail or snow or whatever, they got to eat every day.
Absolutely. I had two other questions for you before we wrap it up here real quick. One, again, I want to thank you for coming on and great insight into the gospel. So thank you for doing that with us. Do you have a book that you would recommend, something that you've read recently that you think would be good for folks to take a look at?
You know, yeah, it's hard to narrow it down to one. But if you're looking for some spiritual reading, just trying to get back, into your faith and not just, you know, go to Mass every Sunday, but really understand prayer and virtue and the spiritual life, St. Francis de Sales, his Introduction to the Devout Life is just wonderful. It's written so clearly. It's written for lay people. I get into trouble when I try to read books that are for consecrated religious. You know, it's like, well, that's not what my life looks like. I'm not there yet. It's for lay people just starting out on their, you know, on the path to holiness. So I would, that's been a great help for me to just read just a little bit every day, 5-10 minutes. But that's a great place to start. Introduction to the Devout Life.
Awesome. And then my final question for you, and this one's probably the most important of the day. So I hope you have a good answer for me.
Uh-oh.
You mentioned bourbon, and I enjoy bourbon myself. Do you and Pater have a go-to bourbon that you guys enjoy the most?
You know, our favorite, if we've got a little bit of a budget surplus for the month, our favorite is Willett's in Kentucky. It's kind of a lesser-known bourbon we found. Not everyone has it, but when we find a store that has stocked it, we like to stock up on that. It's some good stuff.
I'll have to try that. I don't think that's one I've tried.
It's not well known. Yeah, we kind of really just stumbled across it, but man, we love it.
Awesome. Well, there you go. So there's your plug for a book to read and a good bourbon to enjoy it with. Mater, again, I so thank you for coming on. Check out the website at oldsoulradtread.com, where people can find you on Facebook or Twitter. Or Pinterest, all at the same handle, right? Old Soul Rad Trad.
Yeah, is that all the same?
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much. Everybody go back if you're just tuning in and listen to the podcast. We had a great conversation. You can find us on Apple iTunes or on Podbean. And we look forward to having you back to talk about your conversion story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a great time chatting. Can't wait to be back.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You're listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. This is Jason Bramley. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.